I think it's crucial to discuss, as you mentioned, to discuss the significance and the impact of the work that's being done by our military. We have so many soldiers face many challenges, and then when they come back, they're faced with physical, mental, emotional, psychological, and various issues as a result of suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder due to being exposed to various difficult circumstances. So I think engaging in dialogue and understanding the sacrifices that these soldiers do in order to promote the safety and in order to protect us all is fundamental. So I do want to say that on behalf of the NATO Association of Canada, I do want to personally thank all of the soldiers who have made those sacrifices and who continue to fight for our freedom and for our protection. I think that the beauty behind YATA, the Youth Atlantic Treaty Association, is it's an association that provides youth with an opportunity to engage in various discussions. YATA leads a network of youth who foster the values of democracy, the rule of law, liberty, and peace and security. And I want to mention that I feel deeply honored to serve as the Secretary General of YATA, and I feel that this is an association that has done an immense amount of work over the past few years. As you mentioned, YATA does have 36 member organizations, and as someone who's been with the NATO Association of Canada for over the past year, I started out as a program editor of Global Horizons, and then after 8 months, I became Canada's NATO podcast contributor, outreach coordinator, and a project manager. And I can say that, you know, throughout this past year, I've become affiliated with the RCMI, which is the Royal Canadian Military Institute in Toronto, Ontario, in Canada. And throughout the year, I've done many different interviews with various members of the military. I think it's important to understand the sacrifices that our soldiers make in order to protect us all. But it's also important to engage in dialogue and to become affiliated with various organizations and associations that promote liberty, peace, and security. And YATA does all of these things. YATA reinforces the transatlantic link as defined in the North Atlantic Treaty. So I can say that over the past year, as someone who's been with the NATO Association of Canada and as someone who continuously will continue to be affiliated with the NATO Association of Canada, I do look forward to continuing to contribute while also working with the Youth Atlantic Treaty Association more closely as time progresses. What I want to touch on, Ulrich, is in addition to the YATA elections, you also attended our 62nd ATA General Assembly on Tuesday, October the 11th and October the 12th. The ATA, the 62nd ATA General Assembly, for all of you guys tuning in, as you know, took place at the Weston Harbor Castle. This was by far one of the best conferences that I have had the privilege of organizing and managing. I was the project manager of the 62nd ATA General Assembly with Michael DeLeo. And I do want to mention that the biggest highlight of this conference for me was having the opportunity to learn more about YATA and to network and to get to know some of the YATA representatives. The beauty behind this conference was the fact that we had various delegates, diplomats, government officials, scholars, members of the military, and students all networking and having they had the opportunity to not only network with one another, but to learn more about the impact of the work that's being done in Canada. We had the Minister of Foreign Affairs, as you know, attend, and we had various high-ranking government officials attend our ATA. Before I ask you this question, I do want to personally thank our president, the president of the NATO Association of Canada, Julie Lindhout, and our vice president, Doug Knight, for all of your support and for making sure that everything went well. I want to thank all of our volunteers and all of our program editors for helping make this General Assembly a success. With that being said, can you tell us more about your experience attending the 62nd ATA General Assembly in Toronto and what it meant to have so many YADA and ATA representatives attend the 62nd ATA General Assembly?
Yeah, of course. I mean, first of all, I think you touched upon a lot of it. And I think I would like to thank you for for doing this, because it was a fantastic conference. I mean, it was so great to meet so many other like-minded young and old leaders from all over Europe and North America. And yeah, we had 2 days of conference sessions, you know, panel debates, workshops, networking, dinners, and so on. And it got, you know, it got me really close to some important international security policymakers and thinkers. And I gained a network across the transatlantic region. Like you said, we had representatives from all these countries. I think about 30 countries, maybe ATA members from those, all of those. So, which means that now I have a network to draw on and to talk to whenever I visit those countries, or if I need to know more about what's happening inside their political systems, for instance, or with their militaries, and so forth. I mean, and this is for my own use, of course, but also for YADA. And I got to hear speeches from Canada's Minister of Foreign Affairs, senior NATO officials, and especially senior NATO officials who would never have come to Denmark to talk about these things. I mean, those people, they wouldn't have been at, you know, randomly at the University of Copenhagen, where I studied mostly. They come places of interest where they can meet other interesting people and are, you know, invited to come. And this was one of them. So I think that's, you know, my immediate experience of the ATA conference. Of course, I also have like a few more, let's say, memorable moments.
What were some of your most memorable moments while in Toronto over those few days?
Well, first, I had a quite funny experience, because I met former Minister of Defense from Norway, Anne-Grete Strøm-Eriksen.
Yes.
And that was quite funny, because actually I had written about Anne-Grete in my master thesis. I wrote about the international counter-piracy agenda on the piracy off the Horn of Africa in East Africa. And I wrote about how, you know, two small states like Denmark and Norway, how come, you know, they wanted to try and influence this topic, and how come that they, you know, sent their navies down there to fix things and, you know, poured money and political capacity into solving these problems. And I also wrote about like how much influence could they actually get, because they're so small and this was like a big international agenda. And while I was doing that, I also tried to describe the strategic culture of Norway and how they were thinking. And Anne-Grete was, as a minister, part of that strategic culture. She was, she was formulating a lot of values for Norway. She was formulating its policy. And so she was one of the people I drew forward to, you know, show in her speeches what Norway and the strategic community there was thinking. So this was just quite an interesting experience for me, a fantastic experience, actually, to, you know, have studied someone for so long and then actually meeting that person and being able to, to, you know, exchange views and experiences about that time and what happened. I got a few, you know, inside stories about you know, what Anne-Grethe had experienced and how Norwegians were thinking and what was happening with the negotiations internationally. So that was quite funny for me personally. That's the first memorable moment, I would say. And the second is a little more symbolic, I would call it. This is actually, you know, goes back to Julie Lindhout, president of the ATA Canada, because she cited at this dinner we had, last dinner, she cited the report of the Committee of Three on non-military cooperation in NATO, which dates back to 1956. This was a period, you know, in time right after Stalin had died. It's called, some people also call it the Three Wise Men's Report, or I call it that at least. And I was thinking maybe, could I maybe just cite the report for a minute?
Of course, please do.
Okay, thank you. Because Julie, she cited a few articles from the report, and I just, it struck me really, really hard how relevant these articles were, you know, how relevant the report was for today. And Article 31, for instance, says, and I quote now, "We must, however, realize that falsehoods concerning our institutions have sometimes been accepted at face value, and that there are those, even in the non-communist world, who under the systematic influence of communist propaganda do not accept our own analysis of NATO's aims and values." And this is where it gets, now I'm off quoting and I'm quoting again soon, this is where it gets interesting. This quote is about, you know, how there's propaganda and how it's you know, interesting for the period then. And they're trying to say how NATO should be aware that some people are not, you know, interested in NATO being there, and they want to say it's not relevant anymore. And some of these people do not have good intentions. And I quote now again. "They believe that while NATO may have served as a useful defensive deterrent role in the Stalinist era, it is no longer necessary, even for the security of its members, that it's tending now to become an agency for the pooling of the strength and resources of the colonial powers in defense of imperial privileges, racial superiority, and Atlantic hegemony under the leadership of the United States. The fact that we know these views to be false and unjustified does not mean that NATO and its government should not do everything they can to correct and counteract them," unquote. So I just feel that the relevance of this quote is striking today. It's like after the 1990s and the idea that we were on this ladder to ever higher levels of civilization, you know, spreading democracy to every corner of the world, that idea is dead. And I think we have two groups of people today, maybe three. I mean, we have those people who already see the relevance of NATO, and it's become crystal clear for many of us, I would say. But a lot of young people still don't see the relevance of NATO. They haven't experienced its necessity. And I see it as one of my responsibilities as an international board member to be an active advocate, I would say, for transatlantic relations towards young people in Europe, especially, because those are the ones who are, you know, most skeptic, I would say, some in America too. And I want to, you know, teach them why it's necessary and why it's good to have these transatlantic relations. And I want to be a mediator of sorts. I want to take their questions, their doubts and critiques to the people I meet in NATO and other places and ask those people, you know, communicate the answers back to my friends and my audience if I'm satisfied with the response. This is how I see my role as part of, you know, supporting the ongoing democratization of the security institution of NATO, or that NATO is. And going back to the quote, I just think we live in an era right now where we've had a lot of doubts about, you know, the relevance of NATO. First of all, it wasn't in the 90s, it didn't seem relevant. Then, you know, NATO tried to be relevant by saying out of area or out of business. So they went to Afghanistan and tried to be, you know, hooked up with partners, and maybe they're going to do that in the future. But now we have sort of a time where NATO is relevant again for, you know, Europe, and especially, but also for the United States in other ways. I'm not going to talk about that. But basically, I think with all the disinformation we see today, all the doubts that we see today, I think it's more relevant than ever that we communicate the necessity of NATO and of at least transatlantic values and how that is going to secure us not just now, but also in the future.